Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast, episode number 125, interview with Janet Zaretsky. I'm your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Remember to subscribe to my podcast so that you can receive alerts when new episodes are available each week on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I ask that you support my podcast by pledging monthly or your one-time donation. Also, don't forget to share your favorite episodes. Please leave me a five-star review on iTunes. Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter, Maurice Flournoy, and Facebook, New Mind Creator. Janet is a master professional executive coach, trainer, author, and speaker that helps people unleash their brilliance, confidence, and visibility in the world. Janet has worked with over 33,000 people over the past 24 years. Janet is a powerful advocate for ending the gender gap, both in pay and influence. Her work with women has led her to be a frequent contributor to Forbes and the author of Where Did My Confidence Go? And How Do I Get It Back? Known as the BS to Brilliance Master, has a gift for having you unapologetically and confidently express yourself and succeed. As the unique and powerful professional you are, she is a two-time TEDx and keynote speaker, a corporate trainer and expert in communication and leadership, an International Coach Federation member, certified conversational intelligence coach, certified in behavioral style instruments, graduate of Coach U, former senior program leader for Landmark Worldwide, and co-founder of Impact Speaking Lab. So, Janet, how old were you when you first began riding horses?
Wow. I think I was 11 or 12 when I first began riding horses. And then I got a horse when I was somewhere between 12 and 13. In those days, it was elementary school. Today, it would be in middle school.
Okay.
That was fun.
And who helped foster that image or that desire to ride horses?
You know, I don't actually remember too much other than I have a cousin who rode horses, but she didn't live in the same city where I grew up. And this is the only person I know that would be connected to that. And later in life, she actually is partially deaf, and she taught riding for deaf people, but I don't remember. I loved animals. I mean, I was just a craze for animals when I was growing up.
Yeah, I've ridden a horse once, and that's the only time I remember being on it, because I couldn't have been no more than about 12 possibly. And I could just feel the power of that horse as it walked. And I thought that was interesting. I was like, wow, this is a really strong animal. I mean, like, really strong, you know?
Yeah, I think they're both strong and gentle at the same time. And they're super sensitive. So, in fact, I have a friend now who does, it's not therapy, but more like a coaching type of relationship when she utilizes her horses, because horses sense you. They're very sensitive to your emotions, and they are powerful. But yeah, they both snuggle, and they could crush you.
Yes, that's a interesting combination, right?
Totally.
Yeah, because I know in therapy and mental health therapy and other therapies as well, I'm sure, we use something that's called equine therapy, where we use horses. So you're familiar with that? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So horses.
She does a version of that, but she's not a therapist, but she does do a version of that just for, you know, people who aren't dealing with mental health issues, but something is blocking them. And I think that's fascinating. You know, when I was growing up, I rode and, you know, would take care of the stall and all that kind of stuff. It was fun.
Oh, you must have. Where did you grow up, by the way?
Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, so they have horses in Dayton, Ohio, too, right?
They do. I'm not there anymore. I haven't been there a long time. But, yeah.
That's your
Yeah,
roots. Okay.
that is my roots.
Yeah. So I know you are certified in neuroscience of communication. What exactly, what is that, and how would you describe it?
Yeah, the registered trademark is called conversational intelligence, the neuroscience of communication or conversations. And, neuroscience in the world of coaching for sure has just been a burgeoning science. So one of the things that I'll give it to you just in a couple different ways. When people are dealing with their barriers, their blocks, where they're not powerful, et cetera, oftentimes they go to work trying to change themselves. But fundamentally, if you're trying to change yourself, you think something's wrong with me. So it's really hard work and it's emotional, et cetera. I've been coaching for 24 years and I've been doing it's also called CIQ since 2016, so over 3 years. And it revolutionized things for people because instead of, oh, something's wrong with me, I've got to fix, people get, oh, I have brain patterns. And it doesn't really matter. You can get into where did that brain pattern come from, but you have brain patterns of thinking, acting, not acting, and speaking and not speaking. And those brain patterns, when you can see them as a brain pattern, you can create a new brain pattern if you're not liking the outcome. And people are fascinated with that, one, because we always like to know how we work. And two, it becomes so simple for people to alter behavior and alter outcomes. So conversational intelligence is I've got like literally 2 4-inch binders of tools. It's an amazing piece of work. It was created by Judith Glaser, who was, I mentored with her, got trained with her. She died last year, but her work lives on through those of us that are certified in her work. And it's the hardwired neuroscientific way that communication alters behavior. I'll say it kind of simply like that. And there's all kinds of different things in it in terms of the essentials, but we're looking at the brain cocktails that happen when people are threatened. We're looking at the different levels of communication. And the simplest way is we go from I-centric to we-centric, from a world where I'm right and I'm managing you or telling you how to do the world, to we are equals. Let's work together and transform and create together. And that is delicious because you expand what's possible when you've got more than one mind. Does that make sense?
So you have you said that you have more than one mind. What do you mean by
Yeah,
that?
two people. So and let if you and I are talking, and just for example, like I'm managing you or we're working together, or even if we're in a relationship and I'm right about what I say, like we call it addicted to being right. Like I'm telling you what to do versus asking questions for which I don't know the answer. So together we're coming up with solutions and thoughts. That's two minds. Two minds are always better than one, or five minds are better than one.
Okay. So is conversational intelligence, how would you describe it even further, conversational intelligence?
Well, first of all, as human beings, the most important and impactful thing we have is language. Our words shape our world. Our words shape our experience, our relationships, our reality, everything, our culture. So, you and I are talking right now, and people talk, and it's how we move through our lives. It's how we get things, it's how we have time, it's how we express ourselves. Yet, if you go beyond just learning language, like, how do you talk? We rarely take the time in a measured research way to have our world work for us, but also for other people. So conversational intelligence, if you will, is like having a whole new toolbox to go through the world and accomplish things. Okay, so it's science-based communication.
Science-based communication.
Yeah.
So, does everybody have it, or is it something that one must work to attain?
One must learn it. So, you could say, well, I have whatever intelligence I have in the ability to talk, but the conversational intelligence is, so as a registered trademark, I'll give you the exact definition. Conversational intelligence is the hardwired and learnable ability to connect, navigate, and grow with others, which is a necessity in building healthier and more resilient organizations in the face of change. So everything happens through conversation. There's nothing, even when we talk to ourselves, by the way, there's nothing we accomplish without conversations. So you could say, well, I have conversational intelligence. Of course you have, but not what I'm talking about. Not using the neuroscience, it's literally a tool and a science to learn and then use to move through the world and accomplish things in a, we quote it as we-centric way. Win-win would be another way to speak about it.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me because I remember some years ago now, I heard this rapper, and he's also a lecturer, KRS-One. He was talking, doing a lecture, and he gave an illustration about the conscious, the subconscious mind, and he said that we could hear without ears and speak without a physical mouth. And he gave this illustration. He said he held a can of Rockstar drink. I think it's the energy drink. And he said to the crowd, he said, "Say Rockstar." And everybody said, "Rockstar." And then he said, "This time I want you to say Rockstar, but I don't want you to use your physical voice." So he everybody said it, and it was silent, of course. And he said, "Now you said rock star, but you didn't use your physical mouth." And he said, "You heard yourself say rock star, but not with your physical ears." So he said that that part of us is more powerful than that which we see, but we are communicating. He said, when you dream, your eyes are closed, and but you can see without your physical eyes, and you could do these things, but these things we do, but we're not consciously aware of them, so we don't fully take advantage of them or use it to benefit us in a way. So when you were saying that, I thought about that, hearing him talk about that, because it's powerful. We are powerful beings, but if we don't realize this intelligence that we have, we won't fully optimize everything that we have.
Brilliantly said. I mean, that's fascinating, and I totally get what they're saying. I'll give you and your listeners a, I think, a really easy to grasp understanding of this. So there's something in your brain called, and you probably know this, called your amygdala. And your
Yes.
amygdala is often referred to as your reptilian brain. So your amygdala gets triggered whenever there is a threat, whether it's real or it's perceived. So you could go into a room and somebody subconsciously reminds you of somebody, or somebody talks in a certain tone of voice, and your brain perceives a threat. And then what happens is your brain gives you what we call I call it a nasty margarita. It's a bad chemical cocktail of some hormones like cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, which is fine. We all need those hormones, but it floods your brain. And when it floods your brain and your reptilian brain is now triggered, The other aspect of it that's really negative is it slows down the brain's response and ability to get to what we call your third eye, which is in the front of your forehead. That's why we call it the third eye, and it's the executive functioning where your brilliance, your creativity, your compassion lies. And I call it the stupid error. So when your brain gets triggered and your brain perceives a threat, the brilliant, amazing human being can't think. So that's why I call it the stupid error. And then it's like, okay, well, what do I do with that? And you've got to trigger the other side, which is the hormones of connection, which are dopamine and oxytocin. Most people know oxytocin as the hormone of pregnancy, except the interesting thing is oxytocin is the most generated hormone by any human being, male or female, because it's the hormone of connection. So you've got to trigger that side more. And there's something I call there's a whole, this is a tool called the ladder of conclusions, where somebody says something and we run up the ladder and we have emotions and we have things we add to it. And pretty soon we're in this huge upset. And the thing we don't realize is that we've added interpretations, assumptions, and beliefs to what happened. And so is the other person. Imagine if you're in a disagreement with another person. So you're both having a fight, only you're not having a fight about what happened. You're having a fight about whatever assumptions, interpretations, beliefs you added to what happened. And it's hard to resolve things from there. You follow me?
Yes.
So
Yes.
I'll actually share this. So there's a way to what we call walk yourself down the ladder of conclusion. So I created a very simple acronym called WAIT. So WAIT is what happened. So imagine you're in a upset with somebody and you've had a discussion and you're fighting with them or you're just upset in whatever degree that lives for you. So if you take yourself down the ladder of conclusions, you have to separate it out. So the first thing you do is what happened? That's your W. Well, what actually happened? You have to be like a detective. What, where, when, how, who, just facts. Then A for on the acronym is assume. What did I assume? And by the way, add to what happened. So you got to write that out or do it in your mind. I of the acronym is what did I interpret? And not just interpret, I interpreted it and I added it to what happened. And then T is take all that you added away. What you're left with is what actually happened. And when two people are in a, you can resolve things from reality. But mostly what we live in is an unreal world that we've added to what happened, and we don't resolve things from there. So I find that when people can start embracing, gosh, okay, I'm upset. What am I upset about? And then start taking it apart, they can resolve the upset, or they get, there's nothing really to be upset about. That's just what happened. I just didn't like it.
That's a powerful explanation, and it give insight to, because yes, it's often misinterpretation or the adding on to things, right? The adding, the
Yes.
interpretation, and all these different things versus what the reality of it is, right? So we're constantly creating these things to add on.
Yes.
Yes. So how, you mentioned this earlier, how can someone create new brain patterns?
Thanks for asking that. This one is so great. So first of all, back to when I said, people make themselves wrong or get upset because they're dealing with this. They keep doing something that doesn't work for them. So when you look at brain patterns, you can't create a new brain pattern on a week old one. So I go, oh, appreciate that brain pattern. It's well worn. So you can have to graft on the other one. So you have to create for yourself what I would call red flags. What are red flags? Well, something you'll say it, to yourself, or you say it to others, or even you have a physical response to something, and it happens over and over. So it always plays out. It's like if I said to you, Maurice, tell me what you get upset about, you would probably name a few things, but it wouldn't be an innumerous list. It would not be large. It would probably be three, five things. And when we get into it, you would go, okay, I'd say, well, how does that go? What do you say to yourself? What do you say to others? What do you feel like? What are your emotions? And you have what I call a cascade. You see, oh, there it is in living color. And then those are your red flags. So when you see that and you have it, like if you write it down on a piece of paper and you go, oh, there it is. That's my cascade or that's my brain pattern. Then it's like, okay, that moment, the brain pattern isn't using you. You're actually interrupting it. You're now outside of it. And then you go, okay, what do I want to do instead? So you're creating it, but it's simple and it takes effort and time. Usually about 3 to 6 months to start interrupting it and create something new. Does the explanation make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. And how are you able to help clients overcome their mental obstacles? Because we all have different levels of, how would I say this, stick-to-itness, perseverance. Because I know a lot of times when we're dealing with a mental state of mind and trying to change it, it takes perseverance because it doesn't happen automatically. So, how do you help them?
Well, a number of things. So I always say, you got a lot of arrows in your quiver. So I was trained as a coach back before coaching was a thing, back in 1995 and 96. And then I worked for the world's leading and largest personal training and development company. So I have all those technologies and then conversational intelligence. So it just depends on what I'm dealing with. Mostly, we ask questions. And, as a coach, my job isn't to tell you what to do, but to have you discover what it is. Now, I have a lot of tools to work with. So it depends on what you're dealing with. I think the easiest way to describe it is I'm a professional listener and question asker and pointer of direction. So, you're dealing with whatever you're dealing with. I am so trained to listen behind the scenes, so to speak, and I can hear things and I'll ask questions and have you discover it versus me tell you. Because it's kind of like the old parable, if I give you a fish, you'll eat for a day, but if I teach you to fish, you'll fish forever. My job is really to help you discover what's there in the background that's in your way, and then help you learn how to get that out of the way using whatever tools are appropriate. A lot of what I use is the conversational intelligence work, but I have lots of different tools.
Got you. So, do you have any idea of approximately how many people you've worked with over the years to help them?
Probably around 33,000 in 24 years. A lot of people.
Yes, that's impacting a lot of people. And do you get feedback from them like over the years to
Sure,
you?
absolutely. Yeah,
Good.
absolutely. I mean, not all of them, obviously, but yeah. It's funny. I talked to somebody yesterday, in fact, that I helped train and develop, and she's telling me some stuff she was doing, and I'm like, wow, because this is somebody I trained her also. I do public speaking training too, and I trained her to speak and to coach. And when I first started to work with her, she literally would cry and couldn't complete a sentence in the front of a room. And now she's leading workshops and just impacting lives. And she's telling me how she's not, I say, don't step over a gnat's ass. So, I just deal with everything as it's coming. And she is just turned out and just amazing. And that to me is the biggest thing that I ever celebrate is my fulfillment is when other people succeed.
That is great to hear because I think that's what it's all about, helping to build. We're like buildings, in a way. We're constantly shaping, reshaping, adding, taking away things to make that building. And we just keep on throughout the years. So it's beautiful to be able to add to someone's building, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So someone like you who have been able to touch so many lives and achieve greatness in your area of expertise, what did you have to overcome in order to get to this place? Because there's always pain that precedes what we see as looking from the outside.
True. So much. I probably wouldn't have described it as pain. So to develop myself, I had to transform many things in myself. It's hard to even recognize myself, but throughout the years of where I got threatened, where that whole thing about celebrating other people's success as my own, it used to not be like that. I mean, I'm competitive by nature, but not at the level that I am now. I'm still competitive. I like to win, but it isn't at any cost. So I had to deal with myself about that. It was, I grew up with, I'm one of five stair-step kids. My sister was 17 months older than me, and it was, when I was growing up, kind of throwing a fit. She got everything, I got nothing, and I was always, as an adult, unbeknownst to myself, still in that mindset of I have to win over someone. And I had to get that, how could I be a coach if I'm doing that, right? Because I've got to be like, you guys take off 50 times more than I do, and I'm just happy as can be, and I am. And so I had to deal with that, I think. And then, just normal life stuff. Where I said, I'm pretty bottom lined and I'm very powerful, and so I could offend people. Now, I used to care what people think mostly. I'm like, that's not my problem, it's theirs. I'm not here to have people like me, I'm here to make a difference. But there were years where I wasn't. I was worried about people liking me, and boy, that takes your power away really badly.
So, do you remember when your mental transformation happened? Like, was there a switch that happened, or you just got this thing about you, and you wanted different? You because we have these mind states. We grow up, and then we are influenced by our parents or our caregivers, and then our experiences. It could take us in different directions. But
Right.
when did your transformation happen?
Well, it's over years. I mean, I can't say there's one moment. I mean, I had a transformation the first time I participated in a course with my first husband, and then all the years of development of being coached. So I can't point to, well, it was in that moment or not. I think it's, I would say human beings are always a work in progress, and if you're not dealing with yourself and growing, you're stagnant, and if you're stagnant, you're kind of dead, and I don't want to live a dead life.
So it was just a accumulation of things for you. So that's great too.
Yeah.
Yes. So is there anyone in your family, like, who has public speaking in their background?
No.
Oh, wow. So what did your family think about it when they saw you or heard you were, doing public speaking?
I don't know. My family, like my husband and my daughters are very proud of me. My siblings, I don't think they care. I don't know. I haven't ever gotten a lot of really great feedback from them. I don't think they, it just doesn't, it's your sibling. What
Yes.
can you say, right?
Yes, I understand.
Yeah.
So why is having self-confidence so important to each individual? Why should it be anyway?
Well, confidence is, as far as I can see, 100% of people I've worked with deal with some lack of confidence somewhere. It may be hidden from their view, but it's definitely an issue for them. So just imagine if you go in, now I'll get into kind of a lot of the people I work with is like, you want to make more money. We'll say that. If you're going in and you're asking for a raise, you must be uber confident to ask for the raise and stand for it. Like literally create a case for it, stand for it in the face of what if you get pushback? Are you going to just fold or are you going to stand for something? Or if you're an individual contributor like myself and I charge a fee and I'm going to say, this is how much I'm worth. My work is worth. And you have to have confidence to stand there. You have to have confidence to go into a meeting and present a new idea, and there's a possibility it may not be popular. You have to have confidence in everything in your life. And I literally 100% of the people that I work with always increase their confidence, even though they may not have come to me for confidence.
So, what are some ways that a person can build that self-confidence?
Well, it's a very, very good question. It's too complex for a podcast. That would be like hours and hours. It just depends on what they're dealing with. So one, you got to discover what's in the way. So we'll talk about what I was just talking about asking for more money. Mostly what's there is the story you have about yourself and worth, plus whatever you grew up with, stories around money. So I do a money freedom formula workshop from time to time. And in that, we deal with what is your story around money? Like, what is your conversation? What is your mental conversation? What are your practices around money? And let's look, where did those come from? And people, when they discover that, they discover, huh, okay, I took on this, and then it was that impacted my point of view about my worth and asking for money. So you got it in money, you got to look at both sides of the coin. Other things like going in a meeting and asking a question or suggesting something that might not be popular, might not be accepted at a really quick yes. You've got to look at what are the incidences that happen or what are the conversations you have about yourself if somebody says no to you. Some people have in the background, I'm stupid. So you've got to do something to discover what is the real conversation you have with yourself, and then you can transform it. But as long as it's hidden or you're pretending like it's not there, both can be there, you won't ever alter it.
Yeah, because there's always a soundtrack playing in our minds, right? So it's always a theme playing over and over again. Because I know we research says that we think between 50 to 70,000 thoughts in a day, and most of them are repetitive. So it that goes that lends to, being able to change the new brain pattern. Because it's just a cycle over and over again until we choose to be courageous within ourselves and address it. If we really want to change, because we have to see something greater than what we are currently experiencing, or at least perceive it to be like this place that I'm in, I is not where I want to be. And then I have to choose a greater something that's more, it doesn't, it's just something that I really want. So I have to choose that and just continually go after that. So, what are some ways? Well, how have you ever lost your self-confidence?
Oh, absolutely. I often share this story. I had been in front of tens of thousands of people, and I was taking the next rung when I worked for a company in leadership in training. So I was a trainer, and the person training me triggered my brain like nobody's business. Now, he did it on purpose, which I found out later, because I needed to be what we call unmessable with in order to do what I was doing to lead the particular course. But I was a mess. I'm leading this conversation. There's, I don't know, a couple hundred people there. And then he's looking up at the ceiling. He's, rolling his eyes, all this kind of stuff. And my brain got so triggered. I said about the stupid air, I was an idiot. I couldn't complete a sentence. And he said something to me, and I thought, I was like gone. My brain was so gone. And I really had to do some work with my coach to get past that. And then it was really a breakthrough moment for me, because having had that level of brain trigger and then able to get past it, and then I soared from that moment on.
So what was it? I mean, how would you, I know he was looking, was it you thought that he wasn't valuing you or disrespect?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was like, you're an idiot. And in fact, one of the things he said to me later that night was, and you've got to give up being nice. And I said, oh my God, I'm so off. No one has ever accused me of being nice. And let me create the context for that. But not nice like kind, nice as inauthentic, saying something to make people like you, saying something to make people feel good. And I was in a transformational course, and I need to say whatever I need to say to pierce through people's inauthentic relationship to themselves so that they could be connected to who they authentically are. So I couldn't be that way, and I'm never that way. And I knew, oh, if I'm being nice, I am gone. Yeah, no, he totally didn't value. He thought I was being ridiculous. He thought I was being terrible, and I was.
That sounds like a great experience you had
Oh, it was great.
because you were able to, you know, evolve and get better out of it because of
Totally.
it. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the titles of your books? You've written some books.
I've only written one that's complete and one that's in process. So the book
Okay.
that I've written is called Where'd My Confidence Go and How Do I Get It Back? And
Okay.
you can get that on Amazon. I also have a free workbook that you can get to go along with it. It's very practical. That's how I train anyway. It's very practical, exercise based, and it helps people. And then the book I'm writing is on ending gender equality, and the working title is It's Not Them, It's Us. Ending gender gender ending gender gender inequality in my lifetime. That's my goal.
That's your goal. Wow. That's
Versus 208 years, which is what is predicted.
208 years.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Which is pretty disgusting.
Yeah, that's a long time. Yeah. So you confidence. So why did you choose to write your first book about confidence?
Well, probably because of the same thing I said to you, 100% of the people are always dealing with that. And I wanted to create a tool and a way that I could get practical stuff out better and easier than I can't talk to everybody. I'd love to, but I can't. And so doing that made it very simple for people to access it.
Good. So I know, how did you get the opportunity, or how did the opportunities come about for you to become a TEDx speaker twice?
Twice, well, you fly. I mean, so two things happen. I generally get what I want. So I will put, and I think is a really good principle, what you put your attention and intention on and act on, you will accomplish. And so I decided that I wanted to do a TEDx, and I just applied. And then I hired a woman, her name's Tricia Brooke, who's amazing. She's out of New York. She's an award-winning speaker, trainer, TEDx. She's produced four TEDxes, now has Speakers Who Dare. She's a director and a choreographer, and I hired her to help me. And it was, an amazing process of helping me write it, because TED is a different beast than any other talk. And you don't have much time. You've got to accomplish it, certain things. You have to put it in a certain format. And so that's what I did. And then I applied for the second one, because the first one was not well produced, to be honest with you. The people was their first year doing it, and they did not capture my mic. So it's the sound is very hard to get, because you're getting room sound.
So
That's why I did the second one.
that's why you did the second one. So were they on different topics, or what were the topics?
Similar. So the first one's called The Apology Trap, and I have a thing called I'm Sorry, Confident and Not Sorry, which I can also offer your listeners as a gift at the end of this. And because one of the things that's there is reflexive apologizing, that you want to talk about undermining your confidence, your power, and your credibility. And I just went on a mission, and I'm still on the mission to stop people from reflexive apologizing and apologetic ways of being that diminish them. And I'm still a work in progress. I mean, it's not like I don't go, oh, sorry, without thinking, but I'm trying to break that habit and have other people create breaking that habit. And then the second one is called The Currency of Language. And that, I'm really proud of that talk. It's already, it's got a lot of views, over 10,000 views. It really is about the language we're using, and being a woman using language that ends the gender gap. Because ultimately, we as women have to develop our own voice and language versus what we currently do, which is either try to take on a male tone in which we're called, aggressive and pushy, or we be quote unquote nice, which is easy to pass over, ignore, manipulate. So that's how those came about. And one of the hardest things I've ever done, to be honest.
Really? So you said that it's important for women to create their own language expression.
Yes, own voice, our own voice and language.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. It's definitely a needed thing for sure.
Yeah, look it up.
Yeah, definitely. So are you currently working on any new projects? I know your book. Your second book you're working on. Are you working on any other projects?
The only other big project I do training in companies, so I'm going to do more of that next year. And then I have a project with a partner called the Impact Speaking Lab, which you can look at the same website, impactspeakinglab.com, which is a workshop, a 2-day workshop to develop people who want to be really good speakers or presenters, even and in business. And we're working on that using neuroscience. So you can go to speaker training and say, put your hand here, do this, say it this way. And that's great. I'm not diminishing that. But what we've discovered is using neuroscience, we have created a 5-step method called the Impact Speaking Method, that allows people to always be grounded. And when you're grounded in something that you've created, they're more powerful. And people are producing amazing results out of that. And so that's my latest project.
Nice. So, do you have any social media accounts?
Yeah, yes. I'm on all of them. I'm more active on LinkedIn and Facebook than anything. I do have an Instagram. I hardly ever use it. And I do have a Twitter.
Okay. And it's just your name?
Yeah, look, Janet Zaretsky is Janet Zaretsky, as in Sam, KY. And Janet Zaretsky Business is my business at Facebook. And then LinkedIn is just look up my name. And the same thing, Twitter at Janet Zaretsky.
Gotcha.
I'm easy to find. My website is janetzaretsky.com too.
Excellent. That is excellent. So to end, I ask all of my guests this question, and it is, what is your one to grow on? Meaning, what piece of valuable information would you like to leave our audience with?
Be unapologetically you. The you are is the perfect you.
Excellent way to sum up our interview. I've really enjoyed having you on.
Am I okay to give people that are listening that would like it? I have a little gift that's
Oh,
easy
of
to give.
course. Love gifts.
Okay. Well, and it's a free gift, and all you do is text. And so I'll give you the number and the words in a moment. But I have what's called the confidence kit and an unapologetic powerhouse manifesto. So it's very simple to get. And on my confidence kit, I'm giving you the free workbook. You're also going to get the I'm confident and I'm not sorry. You can take a self-sabotage quiz. Anyway, I like to give out things that I think are valuable for people, and most people really like this. So how you get it is you write this phone number in a text, 1-773-770-4377. And in the text, message, you're going to write all lowercase B-B-E space powerful, Powerful. And it'll send back and it'll say, give me your email address, and then I'll send it to you.
Excellent. That sounds good. Thank you for giving that free gift to the listeners. I know it will definitely be beneficial for sure.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it and appreciate what you're doing here.
Thank
Makes a
you.
difference.
Yes, I thank you. You're doing the great work yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the New Mind Creator podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.